Being at Tuesday, somebody that has arrived in the studio with us, it's Jim Jost, Talking Politics. Jim, this week, dual citizenship. This has been a very tricky one for a lot. It's caught a lot of politicians up, hasn't it?
Yeah, good morning, Mark. Yeah, this is basically around Section 44 of the Constitution, which the principal clause that you're referring to basically determines, it says, you know, if you're a citizen of another country, you're not eligible to be elected to either of the Houses of Parliament. But it pushes past that. It's also about the if you have the right to be a citizen of another country. The intent of the clause, I think, is to basically prevent people with foreign allegiances becoming members of Parliament. The intent clause, though, catches people. Sorry, eligibility. So you're eligible to be a citizen, like, for example, Matt Canavan, who has never been to Italy, as far as I'm aware, is an Australian-born citizen.
He's the gentleman he had his mum. His mum apparently had done some things there.
It is a little bizarre that he didn't know, but let's pass that one by for a moment and just focus on the fact that by dint of what his mother did, he is eligible to be a citizen. He has the right to be a citizen. Now, the clause in the Constitution actually covers that. And that means that it could catch a lot more people because many Australian-born people of many generations may nevertheless have some entitlement that they're not aware of. There are other clauses around Section 44, and it's just worth quickly noting a couple of those. One is if you're an undischarged bankrupt, you are not eligible to be elected. If you are under sentence or are currently serving a jail term of more than a year, that also precludes you. If you are a public servant or you are profiting from the Crown, you're ineligible to stand for Parliament, which is why public servants who get nominated to stand for Parliament, when the writs are issued, they resign their position, and usually if they're unsuccessful, they're able to walk back into their jobs. And there's also that's the dimension where you get you're profiting from a relationship with the Crown or from some business operation, which is how Senator Day came unstuck because it turned out that he was leasing the office in which he had the electorate office that he had was in a building that he in fact owned, and therefore was charging the government to lease his own office. That brought him unstuck.
So it can get very complicated and the waters can get very muddy there. I've just had a thought. I know that when I've applied for positions in the past, there is a process that you go through. So sometimes there are police checks done and other sorts of checks and balances before you actually step in the front door to say, well, this person passes the test, they tick all the right boxes and they weed out those people that, shall we say, aren't fit to do the job. Why, when we elect people to parliamentary office, is something similar not done and to say, hey, well, hang on a minute, you're not eligible because of A, B, C, X, Y, Z?
Well, it's sort of simple to answer, but also a bit difficult in some senses. The simple bit is that the constitutional dimension seems to be that if you want to be a member of Parliament, it is your responsibility, your prerogative, if you like, to check all the tick all the boxes, as you say, to ensure that you are in fact eligible, so that when you are elected, you are entitled to take your seat in the House of Representatives or in the Senate. Now, my take on this is that the responsibility, because it rests with the individual candidate, when they are elected, if they have not met that responsibility, they have more or less declared themselves to be not fit and proper to take their seat, and hence they are ruled ineligible. It's a little different to a normal job situation, I think, because when we elect people to the Parliament, and I think this is part of the constitutional background, that when we elect people to the Parliament, we expect them to be trustworthy and fit and proper. Now, of course, there are all sorts of popular views that...
Many would laugh at that, Jim. Many would laugh at that.
But that's the expectation, if you like, constitutionally, that They take the job seriously and they do what is required, which is why the High Court some time back, I think in the 90s, interpreted the clause a little to, if you have taken reasonable steps to renounce your citizenship, then that's okay. If it hasn't yet come to pass, but you have taken reasonable steps to do so and either have been unable to succeed in that because you cannot renounce the right to citizenship in another country for whatever reason, then the High Court seems to have ruled in the 90s that that's okay and that you can keep your seat because you have Australian citizenship and you have taken reasonable steps to renounce foreign allegiances, which is the intent of that clause, Mark. So it's at this stage we don't know whether the High Court will do, whether it will peel back that interpretation, whether it will make a new interpretation. It remains to be seen when these matters get referred to it. It becomes the Court of Disputed Returns, and then it will make a ruling on the eligibility of people like Matt Canavan and Senators Ludlam and Waters. So it's going to be sort of interesting to see which way the High Court goes. But to come back to it, it's a bit messy because a lot of these terms, if you like, these clauses are a bit archaic. It's quite reasonable to prevent people who have a pecuniary interest with the Commonwealth not standing for Parliament. But for someone who's born in Australia who has no connection elsewhere, then maybe the High Court needs to be a bit more definitive about this and make it easier for people to stand for Parliament without running foul of this sort of archaic thing about foreign allegiance.
Mm. If nothing else, it's the flavour of the month at the moment, Jim. It's caught quite a few up, so we'll watch it with some interest.
Well, it certainly has, and it's sort of revealed the character of some of the people involved, but we won't go down that path today.
Oh, we haven't got time. There's no time, Jim. No time. As always, he brings some very insightful information from the world of politics. Professor Jim Jose here this morning on 2NURFM 103.7.